Hey friends, welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today on the show, I'm incredibly excited to have Laura Morganelli as a guest. Laura is a CFP who joined Abacus Wealth Partners in 2015. With over 7 years of experience in personal finance, her main goal is to bring a sense of peace in people's financial lives. She recognizes that financial planning and investment management topics can sometimes feel complex and scary, and is passionate about providing guidance and education in simple, human, and enjoyable ways. Laura lives in Philadelphia. When she's not nerding out over Excel spreadsheets or burying her nose in a book, she can be found at the dog park with her pup, Bella, working out, enjoying happy hour, and trying new restaurants with friends or traveling to new cities. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary Beth. I'm very excited to be on.
Super excited to have you here. And also, you love all of the same things as me. You nerd out over Excel. I have my calculator. So fun. So one of the things we've talked about offline that we both, I think, know and agree that is pretty interesting to the audience here at Work Your Wealth is this idea of stock options. And as young professionals, I see it all the time with clients. I'm sure you see it as well. There's a lot of mystery and confusion around these types of employee benefits, what they mean, when to execute on them, how much they cost, what they give you, cost in terms of taxes. So I thought maybe we could dig into that further today.
Yes, I love talking all things stock options. So the most interesting thing about stock options, from my vantage point, is that there are these benefits that companies offer their employees, and 9 out of 10 times, employees who are offered these benefits don't always understand them. And so one of my favorite things is obviously educating people on financial planning topics. And so talking stock options, I think, is just one of the most interesting things because we get to dig into what are they, what are the benefits associated with them, what are the really important items that we want to concentrate on when we're doing planning around them. And so I thought I'd start by just talking general specifics. What are stock options? So that your viewers and listeners can really understand the what they're getting themselves into if this is a benefit that's offered to them.
So from what I understand about stock options and what I know from clients is that stock options are a popular way for organizations to compensate their employees. And so I know it's a pretty cost-effective way for a company to provide value for the work that their employees do. Mm-hmm. So tell us a bit about what that means. Who typically receives stock options? What are some of the key terms? We can dig into them more, but just what are some of the usual verbiage that we hear around stock options?
Sure. So stock options are typically offered to management or officers of the company, although it's not a hard, fast rule, but typically that's who we see employers offering stock options to. Some of the jargon that you hear are terms such as exercise price, strike price, vesting dates, grant dates. All of those are terminology that goes into figuring out the best way to plan around stock options. But just to give a very simple overview of what a stock option really is, it's just the right to buy a certain amount of stock at a specific time frame at a specific price, which is known as the strike price.
Perfect. Companies give stock options as an incentive for employees to keep doing good work because they're going to give us a strike price. And then the goal is what?
Yeah. So, you know, really where stock options have value is when the fair market value of the company stock is higher than the strike price that the employee can purchase the stock at, right? So the benefit to the company of offering stock options to their employees is that it gives incentive to really help the company grow. They want that fair market value of the stock to grow because the higher that is, the better off their stock options really are.
So walk me through what a situation could look like, or maybe like a sample client example of like what an award would look like that you've seen or come across and how you've helped them.
Sure. So there's really two types of stock options, but just a simple example would be a company grants to an employee, say 10,000 options to purchase their company stock at say $10, right? So they're awarded 10,000 options to purchase it at $10 per option. And say when they go to exercise their option, the fair market value of the stock is $12. So really the benefit to them is that excess of $2, which is called the exercise spread.
So basically what you're saying is you have the option. So 10,000 options is the option to purchase 10,000 shares at $10 per share, right?
Correct.
That's what the award is. But then if the actual price like on the market, the fair market value is $12, if you bought something for $10, it's worth $12, you're netting $2 per share.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay. And so one of the things that I think is interesting are the ways that, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, the ways that you can actually exercise options, right? So we're assuming, so somebody has 10,000 options to purchase at $10. You need $100,000 to actually buy, right? So Right. Do you actually need the $100,000? You need to go in with $100,000, buy the shares, and then turn around and sell them at $12 per share to get that profit? Or are there other ways to go about that?
So there are other ways to go about it, depending on the details of your underlying stock options, which I recommend everyone who has employee stock options taking a look at, or having, you know, a professional take a look at with you, because you can do what they call a cashless exercise, which means that you don't have to put up your own money in order to exercise your options. It's a same day sale. It's considered less risky because you're not putting up your own money. However, depending on the type of options that you have been awarded, there's two types, non-qualified and incentive stock options. You might lose some favorable tax treatment depending on the types that you've been awarded. It's a great way to exercise your stock options without having to put up a ton of cash. Typically, the way it works is you'll say, I'm going to exercise, say the whole price owed is $500,000. You would immediately sell some of those stock options to cover that price.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned taxes. Let's talk about those. So what kind of taxes can you expect after exercising your options?
It's a great question. So for non-qualified stock options, taxes are often withheld at the time that they are exercised by your company. So for example, let's go back to that fair market value of $12 for the company stock and you have an exercise price of $10. Then $2, the difference between that $12 and $10, is going to be considered compensation. And so your company is actually going to withhold income tax, Social Security, Medicare on the spread of your stock options. And then whether or not you decide to hold those shares and let them continue growing, or whether you decide to sell them in that moment, the proceeds from the sale of this stock is going to be taxed under the rules for regular capital gains and losses.
Remind us again what the spread is, what a spread is.
The spread is the difference between the fair market value and the exercise or strike price offered to you when you're granted the options.
Okay. So that's the non-qualified. And what about the incentive?
Yeah, the incentive stock options, those are one way more fun, you could say, but a little bit more complicated. So for taxation of incentive stock options, if you sell them right after you exercise, you don't want to hold them, then you lose favorable tax treatment and it's treated exactly as the non-qualified stock options are treated. If you exercise the options and you hold them from 1 year post-exercise date and 2 years post-grant date, then they get capital gains tax treatment. However, I always add the caveat that in the year that they are exercised, it might actually trigger AMT taxation for high income earners, which is 28% tax on the appreciation or spread.
Okay. So let's break that down a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's go back just to, I think for the audience especially, so the normal tax rates versus the capital gains tax rates as well. Let's talk about those and what the differences are.
Yeah. So typically the capital gains tax rate is more favorable than ordinary income tax rate. It's based on your ordinary income tax rate and can usually be either, depending on your tax bracket, 0%, 15%, or maximum 20%, whereas your ordinary income tax bracket, depending on your earned income, could be significantly higher.
And so the only difference then between the incentive stock options and the non-qualified stock options are the way that they are taxed?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's what makes them different. It's the favorable tax treatment of the incentive stock options that make them different.
Okay. And so one of the questions that I'm sure that you see with clients, I know I've seen as well, will the options gain more value if you delay selling and exercising? So we have a lot of professionals who have options. And so do you have clients who come to you and want to hold on and see where the stock goes? Or how do you usually recommend that people handle things like options?
I mean, it's such a great question and not a one size fit all answer.
Right.
And mainly because it depends on one, the company, you know. So one thing I always love to talk about with clients who have stock options is overexposure to one specific company. You know, when we talk about investments, you hear the term diversification and how you shouldn't have all of your money in just a handful of stocks. When you think about stock options, you start thinking about income and assets that are coming from one specific company. Not only are you getting your regular income from your employer now, but now you're investing a large chunk of potentially your assets in the same company's stock. And so one thing to think about is are you too concentrated in one company? Well, you could argue that it depends on, you know, how big the company is or what the future outlook for that company is. So it really comes down to a number of different things. Obviously, the company that you're invested and working for, and also what you think the future of that company holds. Before you exercise the options, you really have the power to say, okay, if I hold, maybe the fair market value will continue to rise and that spread will be significantly larger, and that could be a good thing. Or, you know, the difference could be that the market could start to drop a little bit and you might be holding onto a company where now your strike price is higher than the fair market value. So, you know, there is a little bit of risk when it comes to stock options in that regard.
Let's talk about that actually. The strike pricing being higher than the fair market value. What does that mean and look like? Paint the picture.
Yeah. So, you know, you could be granted awards that say you can exercise your stock options for $10 per share. And when your exercise date or your vesting period is over, the fair market value of the company's stock might be $8 per share. So if you were in theory to exercise at that moment, you would actually be paying more for your shares than the fair market value of your company stock.
And what's the typical recommended action with that?
Not to do that. I would just recommend not to do that.
I'm leading you here, but I just want to make sure.
And that's one of the benefits of, you know, before you exercise is that you do still have some power. You can make the decision to hold and continue to wait and see what happens to your company's stock. The moment you exercise, you lose that flexibility, right? You're locked into whatever that exercise price is.
Yeah. And that's one of the things too, I think, being aware of. So with companies giving these option awards, sometimes, I mean, I'm sure you see it too. I don't know. With tech startups, there's a lot of options granted, and it really, it's like, that's nice. And it's we're hopeful that the company will continue to grow in value. And sometimes it just doesn't. Sometimes they get acquired and they go public and it does. But so understanding that just because you are awarded an option contract, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll end up with cash in your pocket.
Totally.
The company is giving you an incentive to keep contributing to the price of the company increasing, basically. The more you work and the better the company is, the higher the price, the fair market value. But there's no guarantees. And so you'll see some companies do options and some do restricted stock units, RSUs, which are another award for we can talk about another day. But there's different types of ways a company can incentivize you. And so this one doesn't necessarily always result in money in your pocket.
Yeah. I think that's why you see stock options a lot in startups. You know, they don't necessarily have the cash flow when you're just a brand new company starting out to pay huge salaries to their employees, especially the employees who are getting in on the ground up. And so the thought process behind stock options is, if we incentivize our employees, especially our officers and management, to really go out there and put in the work and build up the company, their effort in the, you know, beginning and the beginning of a company is going to be rewarded down the road.
Love it. Okay. So going back to whether or not you hold on to the stock, or when you're typically guiding, so there's the diversification factor, there's the having too much invested in one company. What about utilizing the profits? So let's say you exercise your options, you get your shares, you sell them. How do you typically advise, or why would somebody exercise their options and then sell?
Yeah, I mean, one big reason that people tend to exercise their options is they don't want their money tied up in one company, right? The thought process behind investment strategies is typically, you know, diversification and spreading your money around so that you're not locked up in one company, so that it's not as volatile should the company go through a specific event, which would either increase its share price or decrease its share price. And so typically, when it comes to recommendations around stock options, we talk through the tax consequences, but we also talk through what is the bigger picture goal, right? When it comes to every decision you make in financial planning, it's really about the long-term big picture goal. Every decision you make is going to either help you take a step closer to that goal or put you on a different path where you need to replan. And so, you know, if someone takes the net proceeds and invests it in a more diversified strategy, that might be more beneficial to them than keeping it all in one company and one stock. And so really it's taking the big picture and saying, does it make sense to hold the shares for a full year and get that, you know, maybe more favorable tax treatment? Or are we going to let the tax tail wag the dog, sort of to speak, and just take all the tax gains all up front, pay that ordinary income tax and get it more diversified so that it can continue on that strategy that you have in place?
So going from the beginning, then, if a client comes to you and says, I have these stock options I was awarded, I don't know what to do with them, then it's a matter of step one is figuring out goals. And then from there, what to do with on whether or not to exercise the options.
Yeah. My first conversation with anyone that comes through the door is always goals. What are your short-term goals? What are your long-term goals? Because every decision and every recommendation that I might give is going to be based on that specific topic. We are trying to reach a specific goal, and that goal could be short-term in that they're looking to buy a house, or it could be long-term in that they want to retire before the age of 65. And my job is to provide recommendations and suggestions on how to get there in the most efficient manner. And if they have stock options as part of the planning topics that we need to talk about, it's what do we do with this? Where are you in terms of the vesting schedule? Do you have options that have already vested and can be exercised that you haven't done anything with? Are you nearing the expiration date for any of your options? Most stock options have expiration dates. And if you don't exercise them by that time frame, then you lose the value of the options and are essentially missing out on that opportunity.
So what are the hurdles that people are usually coming to you with when they have stock options? Are you finding that potential clients and clients are aware that they have the options and know how they work, or do they need more handholding explanation?
Yeah, I think the biggest obstacles usually come in the frame of, I don't want to almost say loyalty to the company, but more kind of having that pride in owning a portion of the company, a portion of those stock options. For some people, it's a little bit of a conversation of saying, okay, do you want to hold on to all of these stock of your specific company? You feel like it's doing a great job. You see the growth and the potential. Or is it that we hold on to maybe a portion of the stocks and we diversify the rest of it? The other big obstacle is always going to be the tax conversation. No one wants to pay more taxes than they have to. So it's the conversation of how do we do this in the most efficient manner while still, you know, diversifying your portfolio by making sure you're setting yourself up for success and not opening yourself up to too much risk.
Right. And then so what are just to recap, the benefits of having stock options, I think there's a variety of them. So what have you seen and how have you seen them utilized to enhance clients' lives?
I think stock options are a great benefit that companies offer. And if you're an employee that has stock options in their names, the benefit is, you know, the potential for growth. As before you exercise, and even after you exercise, if you haven't sold the shares, you have the potential to invest in a company that's continuing to grow. It really does give you that opportunity to feel part of a company. I mean, many people I talk to who have stock options available and granted to them feel a sense of ownership and a sense of control over future company production. And it really does drive them and gives them incentive to work a little bit harder to see that stock price go up so that when they do exercise their stock options, they feel like they're getting more benefit than they thought they were going to get.
Great. Is there anything else you think we should know that we should cover?
You know, I really just think that at the end of the day, when it comes to stock options, making sure that you understand the ins and outs of what exactly is awarded to you is most important, right? When you're given the grants, you're going to get some kind of details around it, the type, you know, what the grant date is, when the vesting schedule is, just making sure that you have a good grasp on all of the moving pieces and either doing that on your own or bringing in a professional to help make sure that you're creating a structure and a strategy for how to handle those options as you move forward so you don't miss important dates and you're not holding on to things longer than you should be.
Let's actually talk for a second about vesting schedules. So I think that's one of the things that trips people up is vesting and what it means, because there's a few ways that that could happen. So what do you typically see for vesting for options?
Typically for options, I see cliff type vesting where you have to hold them for a certain number of years, depending on the type of option and the company you're working for. Similar to what I've seen for, you know, almost a 401k, you have to hold them for a specific number of years before you can exercise them. Part of that is from a company standpoint, the incentive of doing it that way is that it just incentivizes an employee to stay on longer. You're right. The longer you have to hold them before you can exercise them, the longer you're going to want to stick around and make sure that the company you're with is moving in the trajectory you want it to be moving.
Right. And then with that, let's also talk about the expiration date, because these actually can expire. If you don't execute, then you could lose that on the value.
Yes, they can expire. Typically, what I've seen is about a 10-year expiration date. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you don't exercise them by the expiration date, then you lose them. And so the big thing is making sure you don't do that. You definitely want to make sure you're exercising them before the expiration date so you're not losing the options that were granted to you. Otherwise, you're just essentially losing out on what I would determine to be free money or free right. investments.
Agree. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to share this.
Of course.
Let's take some time and we'll transition now to the wrap-up questions.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the best financial advice you've ever received?
It's such a great question. And I always think back because, you know, working in this field is sometimes easy to just remember all the advice you've learned while going through the schooling. But I think the best financial advice I ever was given was by my parents from when I was younger. They would always tell me, Laura, you need to get a good job and earn your own money so you can always support yourself. And I really took that to heart and made sure that no matter what I did, whether it was going to school or what job I wanted to take, that I really made sure that was the case. I never wanted to have to rely on someone else. I always wanted to make sure that I had my own emergency fund. So if I needed to tap into that, I never had to ask for help. And it's really been one of the best pieces of advice I probably could have ever received.
I love that advice. So what would you say then is the worst money advice you've ever received?
The worst money advice I ever received is hands down that it's okay to just put stuff on your credit card to enjoy life while you're younger, right? You hear people say it all the time, you know, you can always make more money. And while that is true, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should put things on a credit card to do fun things while you're younger just because you have the opportunity, because that can really come back to bite you in terms of how much money you're paying towards interest or, you know, struggling a little bit more to pay off your credit cards versus, you know, put money away and save for your longer term goals.
So true. Love that. What would you say is your favorite money mistake you've made and why?
Oh gosh, I actually love this question. So maybe 5-6 years ago, me and my brothers went in together, and my middle brother had come up with an idea for an attachment for a razor that would help keep, you know, the stubble as a guy was shaving his face for an electric razor in, so it was less messy. I assume it came somewhere from his wife trying to kill him for the mess he was making. And so he came up with this just to help with him specifically and decided that he wanted to try to sell it. And so me and my oldest brother actually went in as investors on this product. We worked, you know, pretty hard together on it. We came up with a prototype. We even pitched it to Shark Tank. It was a really, really fun process, and it never ended up taking off, even though I still to this day think it was a great product. I just think it needed a little bit more work, more time than we had to invest in it. And, you know, I did put some money into it that I didn't necessarily get back, but hands down, it was one of the most fun experiences I've ever had with my brothers. It was something I would 100% do again because, you know, now we have the experience, and if anyone can make a product come true, it's that kid. And so that was probably some of the most fun I've had with them in our adult lives.
Oh, that's a fun story. I like that. That's super cool. So what was it like pitching to Shark Tank?
Oh gosh, it was so interesting. You know, we didn't actually get on the show. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, we hadn't sold the product, but, you know, we went in and they gave us the structure of how to kind of pitch it, and we came up with our spiel, and all three of us were involved, and it was a really, really cool experience. Just the whole, you know, we were in line with and waiting with hundreds and hundreds of other people waiting to get on the show and pitch their products. And, you know, we drove to DC to do it. It was a really cool experience. I would 100% do it all over again.
Wow. That's cool. That's a good money mistake.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay. And then finally, what does being wealthy mean to you?
Such a great question too. You know, to me, wealth doesn't necessarily mean that I can do, you know, I have millions and millions of dollars. For me, it's just being comfortable. I want to make sure that I'm covering my day-to-day bills. And I want to be able to go out and say, yes, I want to go out to try this new, maybe expensive dinner or book a trip to a new country or a new city I haven't been to without having to worry, right? That's really what wealth means to me. It means being able to enjoy my life and experience different cultures and different cities and travel and spend money on experiences and with people I love without having to worry that my long-term financial plan is going to be negatively impacted.
That's a great answer. Okay, Laura, tell our listeners how they can contact you or find you.
Yes. So you can contact me by email. My email is lmorganelli@abacuswealth.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Laura Morganelli or LinkedIn.
All right. I will be sure to include that in all the show notes. Thank you, Laura, so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary Beth.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you're ready to start making smarter choices with your money, head over to www.workyourwealthbook.com to grab a copy of Work Your Wealth and learn the exact financial planning tips I walk through with my clients.